When the music fades, all is stripped away, and I simply come, longing just to bring something that's of worth, that will bless your heart.
Hi, this is Chaplains Timothy Burdick
and Stephanie Burdick,
and we'd like to welcome you to the Visions of Love podcast, reaching out to the spiritually and physically blind throughout the world.
Hello, folks. Welcome to our podcast. In today's episode, we feature part one of an interview with Todd Smith. He is the program director of the long-term residential recovery program at the Phoenix Rescue Mission in Arizona. He has a great Christ-centered program for people who've gone through all sorts of bad things in their lives, and Todd has a few stories about those things. He also tells you how you can help this program out and how you can pray for them. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless you.
It's all about you, Jesus. Thank you.
to contact us, all you need to do is go to mynvm.com.
NVM is an acronym for New Vision Ministries.
If you want to contact us, there's a contact form on the website. Or if you don't know Christ or need prayer, please call 507-369-6861. Thank you.
And now for part one of our interview with Todd Smith.
Everybody, I'm honored to present Todd Smith. He's the manager, the men's division for the Phoenix Rescue Mission. Todd, would you introduce yourself, please?
Hi, Tim. It's great to be with you today. Yes, I'm here in downtown Phoenix off 35th Avenue at the men's campus and the men's program director for our acute care and long-term residential recovery program. And in this program, we take folks that are homeless right off the street, family interventions, folks dealing with legal issues, probation, just that make life decisions not so great. And we have all of the above at our facility and have a great Christ-centered program for them.
We were talking about how addictions and mental illness played into homeless. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. Actually, you'll find addictions and mental illness go hand in hand. And in some cases, what they found in most recent studies is that a person that is not diagnosed with any kind of behavioral or mental illness after participating in drug abuse, on the backside of that, over 34% of them actually now have a medical diagnosis of some sort of behavioral situation or mental situation. So a lot of the clients that we do have in program, they do have behavioral health meds. Some of them have some physical challenges as well as dealing with the addiction. So yeah, it's a myriad of issues that we're dealing with nowadays.
So what would you say is, you know, the complexion of homelessness with COVID and everything going on now, how is that affecting people?
Well, with the COVID, the problem there is it isolates everybody. People have lost their jobs. The homelessness across the country has been on an astronomical increase. You also have depression. You have new addictions. People never been addicted before, now addicted to substances. We have massive research that is showing relapse on faster relapse for people that have overcome addictions. In mental health, they're not able to get medication or therapy or anything, any resource like they should. So they're out on the streets with nothing, which just creates even more barriers for healthy life, for health in general, and for community. So the COVID has just created more isolation and just kind of put a big giant magnifying glass over whatever problems people had.
So what would you say are some of the main challenges that you have in dealing with the homeless population?
One of the biggest challenges is once a person gets into that state, they have to recognize that they need help. That's probably the biggest thing is we open the door, we try to encourage them, but we can't obviously make someone come off the street. They've got to want to come out of that situation and realize the need to make some changes and to get help.
Is there a lot of fear that holds them back from getting help?
Yes, it's fear. It's kind of fear of the unknown. Also, people have a hard time with change, even if it's an unhealthy lifestyle. Many times that's all they know. So they don't know that there's something better for them if they make some different decisions or change some patterns in their life. So I think it's a lack of knowledge and fear.
So what kind of things has the Phoenix Rescue Mission done to create positive change?
Well, the way we've designed a lot of our programs and the way that we posture ourselves, we have continuing to increase our outreach vehicles. So we have teams that now go out and search out people that are homeless, that are disconnected, that are displaced, and we're even a moment's call away. We can deploy a vehicle with a team. We've added onboard mobile case management services so we can help navigate a person right on the spot and help them find shelter, find resources, get identification, do a lot of things on the move where in the past they would have had to have come to a facility to find that. We've become more mobile in reaching people, and then in our residential campuses, we've also tried to look at what barriers we can reduce to make it easier for people to get to us and to come into our programs. And we've created what's called RAP, which is Reach, Assess, and Place. It's very easy to get into that segment. It's kind of like an acute care triage where you can come in, we'll give you a bed, we'll feed you, we'll clothe you, we'll make assessments, make some recommendations, get you healthy, try to get you pointed in a good direction, and give you some options for what's next. So we've changed reducing barriers to get people off the street. We've mobilized vehicles to get out there to where the people really are.
So we've talked about fear, but what are some of the other challenges maybe that the homeless people confront in coming to you?
Honestly, Tim, one of the biggest things is shame, guilt, embarrassment, intimidation. You know, it's just when they go in, they start to make a change, you know, that shame holds them back a lot of times. And we welcome them with open arms. We try to make it as welcoming as possible for them. And pretty much everybody at our campus has been at that same place at one time or another. So there's a relational piece that we can offer them. But a lot of times, too, is they may not know where we are. It may be too far for them to get to. So distance can play a piece of that. Lack of knowledge of the Phoenix market can play a piece in that, which is another reason we've mobilized to try to get the word out and to get exposure and to help meet them where they're at. And we actually can transport them. They don't have to find their way to us. Those are some of the real barriers that I see from the homeless population getting help.
What are some stories maybe you have of some positive changes people have made?
Oh, we have amazing positive stories and large quantities of folks that come through the gate, and in the process of helping them do their case management and navigating next steps of life and getting them health care set up and getting their treatment plan going, we actually call our building the Transforming Lives Center, because we literally do see transformed lives on a daily basis. And it's amazing because we take a picture of them when they come into program, and then when they graduate, they have another picture that's on their little ID badge to recognize them on campus. And to see the difference between those pictures is just phenomenal. The change, many times they're coming in very emaciated with lots of ailments, even outward sores and things like that. And we'll get them medical care. We get them food, healthy, nutritious food. Within a very short amount of time, they're gaining weight. They're getting healthy. And you literally see the physical transformation happen as well as the spiritual transformation.
Do you have one example that you could share with our listeners?
Yes, actually, we actually just hired a gentleman that when he came to the gate, he had just gotten out of prison, had nowhere to go. He was actually in a pagan religion in the jail, and just a very hard guy, just really, really tough. And we brought him into program. We interviewed him and said, "Hey, man, you know, are you sure you're going to be okay with this?" And he said, "Yeah." And he came in, and the tough guy, and just the not really sure what's next. And in a very short amount of time, he really began to embrace his recovery part of program. He had destroyed a lot of the relationships in his family over the years, and we were able to see him just completely transformed. If you met him today, you would say, "Man, that guy is the most loving, friendly guy I've ever met." And it's really amazing. And actually, he did so well in program that when he graduated, we had a job opening in aftercare, and we hired him for it. He applied for it, and we hired him for it. He's just done a phenomenal job, just a completely different life track. He said, "You know, if you had told me, you know, a couple of years ago that this is where I'd be, I'd say, 'You're crazy. I've used up all my chances. There's no hope for me.'" And yet now he's seeing his family dynamics restored. It's just been an amazing life change story.
How do people come to Christ and take that first step?
Well, in RAP, in that Reach, Assess, and Placement period of time, which is usually 7 to 30 days, depending on how complicated a person comes in medically or legally or relationally, we'll begin to prep them for what we offer. And we invite them, "You're welcome to stay here and join our program." We try not to ask a person for too long of a period of time. We are a long-term residential, up to a year, even a little bit longer. But for the most part, we offer a 60-day and then a 12-month program. And so we just see if we can clear these guys for a 60-day uninterrupted time of recovery. And in that window of time, moving from RAP into our beginning of program, which we call Foundations, we begin to lay out some holistic principles. We talk about chemical dependency. We talk about the first three steps of the 12-step program. And we also begin to lay out a foundation of biblical principles and why we do embrace the Bible as truth and how that can affect that holistic person spiritually by having Christ in their life. And so an evangelistic message is laid out. We support that with an amazing curriculum. And that's when they typically will find that opportunity to receive Christ at that time and begin to see a spiritual transformation as well as their body is changing. Sometimes it's a little later on in program. I've had guys even as late as almost graduating when they're kind of like in the Bible where King Agrippa almost persuaded. They go through all the way through program, almost persuaded. And then at the very end, or near the end, they actually make a commitment to Christ and really come alive and really understand. They're kind of like, now I understand. And it's a wonderful experience to see. And we have many, many clients on both campuses, the men's and the women's campus, that come to Christ every month.
Wow, that's wonderful. Do you have any kind of follow-up programs, either after they've graduated or that they can stay there as far as any kind of discipleship?
Yes, we do have worked into our program. What's laced into our program is we have a mentorship program where volunteers can mentor. They can be assigned a client later on in program, and they actually have a mentor as they graduate and begin to move off campus. But we also, a little over a year ago, we had formed what's called an aftercare program. And we actually have staff now that all they do is contact those that are about to graduate or move off campus and keep that safety net connected with them, that connection of friendship, accountability, sobriety, helping them make good choices for next step as far as interim living. We also, those representatives actually go to their home, do a site visit. If they open their refrigerator and don't see any food, we can go get them food, provisions, but just help them stay on that path until they can stand on their own two feet. So that's a very powerful program that we're constantly renovating. We just started it. We're improving it as we go and continuing to build on that. And they will stay with that client as long as that client answers their phone, checks their Facebook, is at that residence, and stays in connection with us. So it's ongoing. There is no time limit for aftercare for those that have graduated our program.
So shifting gears just a little bit, as the manager of this, the program director, I should say, what are some of the biggest challenges that you face?
One of the biggest challenges is, as you know, addiction can stunt the emotional growth of a person. So I may have a man here that's 30-year-old outwardly, but he's 10 years old inwardly. He's had trauma. Some of them have just an amazing amount of trauma that has just stunted their emotional growth. The substance addiction has stunted their emotional growth. So they may be 30 years old, but they don't know how to pay bills. They don't know how to do life. They don't know how to have a relationship. They may even have a few kids out there, but they don't know how to be a father. And so really one of the greatest challenges is bringing these guys up to speed, catching them up with the age that they actually are, then really helping them, empowering them to be able to go out there and be that 30-year-old man or that 40-year-old man in the community and in life. So that's probably one of the greatest challenges, is just they come in emotionally stunted, and then we have, you know, an amount of time with them to try to help them catch up.
What about the challenges also that Phoenix Rescue Mission has, just as far as mechanics? What are those like?
Well, one of our current challenges, which is being met now, has been space, has been growth. Our men's ministry has really maxed out, and so we have this new building that we're building that will more than double our population so we can continue to. What breaks my heart is I don't ever want to have to turn somebody away. I don't want a long waiting list. I want to be able to say, yes, come on in and let's get you going. So space, resources, facilities has been limited to some degree, which through the provision of our capital campaign and different things going on now, we're seeing and experiencing expansion, and that will need to continue for the next few years. We have a lot of needs in general. Volunteers are needed. Manpower is always needed. We have a food pantry that runs throughout the week. We have outreach that goes on. We have volunteer services on both campuses that need to happen. And unfortunately, during COVID, some of that has been curtailed. But as soon as the restrictions for COVID lift, those needs are going to be very obvious. You know, many hands makes the job easy. And so definitely hands on deck, financial resources, facilities expansion, all of those things help the job be easier. All about
it. That concludes part one of this interview. We hope that you're enjoying it. And please stay tuned for part two of this interview in 2 weeks. Thank you.
hope you've enjoyed this, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. God bless.
Thank you, and God bless you.